Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Katie Keenecast, a podcast all about the CW's Katie Keene. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin, still dreaming after all these years.
And I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about Chapter 10 of Katie Keene, a.k.a. Gloria, Gloria.
Yes. Nice.
I'm glad I didn't have to do that bit.
It's a title. What a beautiful falsetto. It's just...
Thank you very much.
Don't inflate that ego.
I got to be honest. I was a little disappointed that they didn't sing that in the episode. It felt like a prime opportunity to do it. And
I'm proud of them for that.
They blew it. They blew it across the board is what I'm saying.
Wow. I mean, it's probably hard to get the rights to that song, I would think.
Probably. It's like the happy birthday song.
You don't want to steal. The thing of stealing a song, it's fucked up to do that. A lesson. Mm-hmm. I think we learned in this episode.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It would be great if Josie was going to start to sing it, and then, you know, Sandra stole it and started singing it.
Mm.
That's the only way it would work.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Well,
wow.
The rights are, I believe, owned by Gloria Estefan. I could be wrong about that, but she's the only Gloria I can think of offhand. So
no,
I assume it's true. Yeah.
The same way that Jack Flash owns the rights to Jumpin' Jack Flash. Also, that Jack Flash is also known as The Flash.
Oh, wow. It's all coming together. And The Flash is on the CW, just like Katie Keene. And that is a great setup to talk about a little bit of recap of what's led us to this point on the show. Now, Katie Keene is working at a place called Lacey's. She's working a couple of jobs there, working for a lady named Gloria, who is part of the personal shopper. Gloria! Part of the personal shopper.
Oh, I feel a harmony coming on. Pete's got the low register. Alex is a little angel.
That would depend on me knowing any other lyrics other than Gloria to that song.
My understanding is that song is it's a 20-minute track where the word Gloria is said over and over again, and that's it.
All right. Yeah, mm-hmm. I've never listened to it, so there you go.
Oh, man.
So Kitty Keene is working at Lacey. She's working for Gloria Grandbelt, who is kind of a mean dragon lady, but also a little bit of a mentor to Katie at the same time. There's also a woman named Amanda, who is not even a friend of me so much as
app.
Great Amanda.
Oh,
app.
What an Amanda
strong
app.
Amanda showing.
Amanda is Katie's rival in the personal shopper department, doesn't really like Katie very much at all, definitely sucks up to Gloria a lot. At the same time, Katie is also working on an apprenticeship for a sexy Satan named Guy LaMontagna. He has the eighth floor of the building all to himself. Katie's been working there. They reached an understanding the last episode. However, a couple of episodes back when they first met, things got a little flirty late at night at Lacey's. They almost kissed until she vomited right in a handbag. Another thing that's been going on in Katie's love life, is she hooked up with a literal prince named Errol Swoon, who is engaged to be married not exactly related, but she ended up being hired to design a wedding dress for the wedding. She deferred, got Guy to design the wedding dress instead, but there's a whole tangled web going on there of secrets and lies.
I seem to remember there used to be a guy who, like, I guess was in this show, like, not super important.
Fuck you. Fuck you.
His name was like,
it's KO, motherfucker. Don't be a douchebag.
It was like FP or
okay, Gene. Okay, Gene is what I think
it was. Okay, that's what it was.
Yeah, okay.
Because he's only okay.
No. K.O. Kelly, ooh. Katie Keene's true love, who is a boxer. They broke up.
You said it
towards the beginning. It is true. Towards the beginning of the series.
I don't know. He's a ghost in this episode. He's mentioned once in passing.
One app. He's got to train for his big fight he's got coming up.
I think
the other thing that's going on
KO
with him
got
is
KO'd.
Ooh, love life wise, at least. The thing that's going on with him that you should probably know about is he is dating Zandra Cabot, who is the head of Cabot Records and Cabotur and various other arms of the Cabot family fortune. She hates Josie McCoy. Josie McCoy, of course, of the town of Riverdale, who has restarted her band, Josie and the Pussycats, on her own after a scuttled EP with Cabot Records. Now, the other thing that we should mention about Josie that's very important for this episode, beyond her dating Alex Cabot kind of on and off, is her stepbrother, Kevin Keller. You might have forgotten about that detail, but their parents their parents got married in season 3 after being high school sweethearts and separating for a very long period of time. So, in fact, Kevin Keller and Josie are step-sibling, step-brother, and step-sister. Kevin Keller, in case you don't watch Riverdale for whatever reason, though I imagine that's probably not true, is very into drama. He is always kickstarting the school musical over the past 3 seasons or so. I don't think he did that in the 4th season. There's other things you probably need to know about Riverdale, but you'll figure them out as we go.
Also, Kevin's missing organs.
Yes, that's a huge
doesn't
factor
really
here.
Play into the episode, but you could see every once in a while
he'd win.
He's not processing liquids as well as he could be.
Yep.
Yeah, there's all those shots where you can hear him screaming in the bathroom in the background. He's a very if you don't know, he had his kidneys had a kidney taken.
Just one, not both kidneys.
Yeah. It's hard to live with no kidneys.
I mean, poor Kev, man. I mean, it doesn't get any better for Kev in the future.
Right. Yeah, that's true. They keep taking his kidneys. They keep putting them in. Every time I get a kid, I think I have an extra kidney. They take it back out. That's the quote from The Godfather, right?
Yeah, that's true. That was a surgical mafia surgery movie, I believe.
Yes. Other characters you probably know about, there's Pepper Smith, who is a con woman living in New York. She is starting her dream, which is the Pepper Plant, a multi-use art space, along with her partner in crime, literally Dee Dee, who used to work at a hotel that she was scamming her way to living at. As we found out last episode, though, Pepper actually has a secret wife who hates Pepper and wants to absolutely destroy her for everything. Pepper is trying to go on the straight and narrow, but it's not quite working, as we see this episode. She's also kind of on the side, sort of tied into the Pepper Plant, working as a producer for various productions that her friends are putting on, including Jorge Lopez, who is also a drag queen named Ginger Lopez. Yeah. Jorge is dating a guy named Bernard.
Yeah.
Bernardo?
Yep.
Bernardo. Bernie. Right? Bernie Bro. He is a firefighter. He's sexy. He's nice. He also had an ex-boyfriend named Buzz, who is a stockbroker who has become more open about his own sexuality. He was a little closeted for a while. And the last episode that all came to a head when they had a little bit of a threesome that went on. And as we ended the episode, at least, it seemed like Jorge was regretful about the threesome. But we find out this episode it is anything but.
Yes.
So with all of that set up, let's get into this crossover episode of Katie Keene. Justin, take it away.
Let's do it. So we kick off the episode hot, steamy scene. Talk about a dreamer. We get Katie having sex with Guy.
Well, back up the truck. I mean, it started with what we kind of
feared. The sex truck? Back up the sex truck?
Yes.
Okay.
It started with what we kind of feared.
Beep, beep, beep. Sorry. Backing up the sex truck.
Just a quick question about that, actually. Do they do contactless delivery on the sex truck now?
Oh, yeah. For those of you that don't know, Pete runs take a taco truck for sex. It's a sex truck. You could just Google it, and you can take advantage of this great service that he provides.
Anyways.
Thank you, Pete. You truly are the first responder right now.
It started with a fear that we had last episode that Katie Keene was just going to be his, like, basically mannequin. She would just be modeling dresses and not getting designing. So it kind of starts off with she is this, you know, she's modeling the dress and, you know, just kind of spinning around. And then they get all kind of, like, hot and heavy.
She loves it, though. She loves it. He cuts her dress. It's sexy. She loves
it. Very hot.
The whole thing, I got to be honest, that was a pretty hot dream. And I felt like, should she be hooking up with her boss? Absolutely not. but they're good together. They got chemistry.
Oh, stop. He's the devil.
I like the way you position that devil. Is. Should she be hooking up with her boss? No. But should she be hooking up with her boss? Yes. Yes, she should. Alex is the head of our HR here. And honestly, there are a lot of complaints specifically about Pete's sex truck when it comes to our business.
I mean, I don't want to pull back the curtain too much, but at the HR department of my actual work, there's a little box like, should you be doing this? And then under it is like, but is it hot? And if the answer but is it hot, they're like, go ahead.
This is really creepy, dude.
You work at a very sexy news website, right, Alex?
Yes, absolutely. In the 1980s.
Nice. Anyway, this scene is very good, as we said. And then suddenly we realize it's a dream. She wakes up to find Josie and Kevin right out the gate in her room.
Yeah.
Calling her out, having a too flushed a face, because that means a sex dream is happening. And Kevin, as always, has no idea quite what's going on and has little to do right out of the gate.
I do like, just to talk about the Kevin of it all, and I'm sure we'll talk through his whole storyline. But I like the fact that they did actually bring him in for more than a one scene turn, which is the same thing they did with Sierra McCoy a couple of episodes back. And they figured out a way of having the guest stars come in and have it tie into the overall journey of the characters, which is smart and important. And, you know, it's not, there's a lot of shows that don't do that. They'd be like, hello, I'm Kevin Keller. See you later. New York is great. But they give him, honestly, more of a plot line than he's had, I think, on Riverdale in several seasons at this point.
Yes, I was definitely, like, that's 100% true. It's crazy. He had...
Not several seasons. Like, I think it was last season when it was, you know, he was in the farm. He had a lot to do.
Brainwashed flunky who came in and was like, my organs, and then that was it. And then this season, he's the musical episode he was great in, but he hasn't had stuff going on, like an ongoing story. And so it was sort of nice they generated an ongoing story that they retroactively made come to a head in this episode.
Yep.
Yeah, it was sad, though. Poor Kevin.
It was sad. I mean, overall, it was interesting to start off with a sex dream about your boss when so much of the episode was not exactly Me Too, but about Kevin getting assaulted by somebody in power. Certainly, there was a lot of that in play. Also, in a more subtle way with Pepper's storyline as well. Just people getting control over each other and how those things can get mixed up. I think that was a running theme through the episode, and it was nice how they played it out at different levels.
Yeah, it was sort of, it felt like very disparate storylines, but they were thematically linked. And it didn't even come to a big head where it was like, look, we're all dealing with the same stuff in New York City. It was more like these storylines just came to a close.
But that's also what Gloria was dealing with. Apparently there was some scandalous stuff in her past with when it came to, you know, or her workplace and stuff like that. So that's, it was all kind of tied in. It was just different levels of creepiness, really.
Yeah. But Pete runs a tight ship at the sex truck. There's no funny business except for the funny business that you're there to actually pay for. But anything else is it's all above board.
Yeah. There's also an option that you can select. It's right at the bottom of the menu, but there is funny business and it's people dressed as clowns.
Yeah. Tickling.
Zalman's into that one.
He is. Alex is into that.
I mean, I'd call a clown, so what can I tell you?
Oh, God. Oh,
that's right. Alex is married to a clown, so of course we have no more questions about this. Let's jump in back into the show and forget about that little interstitial. The storyline, we move over to Gloria, who's written a book about her take on fashion. So they're having a big book launch today. Katie shows up, sees Guy, is weird, total flashback.
Mm-hmm. And that was funny, though. I want to talk about how, like, Guy immediately picked up on that and, like, pulled her aside and was like, what is your deal? And she is, like, she looked very flustered just, like, after the dream. Was like, nothing, what are you talking about? And then, of course, that turned into Gloria being like, is it something with the dress, you know? So I thought that was, like, a really kind of interesting kind of telephone game of sometimes how things kind of can spiral.
Yeah. Should we
I think this
about...
would actually be a great topic to talk about more. Usually we talk about a very personal topic. So maybe like sexiest dream you had about another person and who was that person. Pete, why don't you go first?
Yes. And we'll need so... just as part of this fun New York bit we do, we say full names and social security numbers. So just remember that as you're telling us about this hot dream.
I want to just say Pete. Something. That, you know, we've been doing the show for over 14 years, and it hurts to know how creepy Zalbin has become over the years. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if he's always been this creepy and slowly he's letting us in or what.
Well, can I say the craziest part about that, just to, like, own what you're saying? The craziest part is that Katie Heen has only been on for a couple of months, but we've been doing this podcast for 14 years.
Yeah. We filled the time, though. We really did.
Do you know who Katie Keen is? I don't. And that was the first episode.
To your point, Pete, I think we've just slowly watched Alex over the years wipe off the clown makeup to reveal the real perv underneath.
That's great. Thanks, guys. Thanks for going on this journey with me.
It's been a roller coaster, and I've loved every second of it. Anyway, how do we want to tackle this? Should we just keep talking about these sexual proclivities, or should we move back into the TV show we are here to talk
about? Let's talk about the TV show, I think.
Great choice.
Why don't we do Glorious first, because everything kind of branches off of that.
Great. So Gloria, Gloria has her own storyline, and then Katie and Guy are sort of mixed up in that.
Right.
Thematically, as we said. So we have, we go to the next scene is sort of the book launch. Setting up for that, Katie's deciding whether or not to wear this dress from Guy. Because she's worried that she's talking to the gang and she's like, if I wear this, am I saying, hey, I'm your model, I'm your muse, let's go.
Yeah.
But if she doesn't wear it, is she rejecting it and harming her chance to continue to work for Guy in the atelier?
Right. Which is it's got to be a tough line to kind of deal with, you know? Like, is this going to hurt my career versus, like, how creepy is this going to get?
Yeah. I guess to talk about that, she later, after all these revelations that she comes to, gives the dress back. To Guy to try to keep their relationship above the board. But I feel like they are still both acting on the chemistry between them.
Yes, 100% definitely. I mean, she did the right thing in this episode.
She had
a couple of episodes in a row where Katie tries to do the right thing, but makes things worse in the situation. This is one where I think she eventually came down to the correct solution, but... Well, to your point, Justin, they have a ton of chemistry, and I really do think we are heading towards a situation where next episode things get flirty again with KO, Errol Swoon is probably going to come back, and I don't know if we're going to end the season with this, but there's no doubt in my mind there's going to be a situation with all three dudes standing around Katie. She's going to have to make some sort of a choice.
Yeah. Prince, ooh, hometown hero, or the person that she wants to be. Basically.
Yep. Oh. Exactly. There you go. Good way of breaking it down.
KO wins.
I don't know. Do you know what KO stands for, Pete?
Knockout.
That's right. He's out. O-U-T. He's knocked out.
You set me up. You set me up, man.
Do you know what Guy stands for?
Yeah, the devil.
Guy. Guy stands for Guy. He's a guy. It's as simple as that. You know what Swoon stands for? No. Single, white,
over octagons.
Over octagons, necking. He's necking. He's going to be necking with Katie. That's a breakdown right there.
Yeah. Guy stands for get up, yo.
Exactly, because he's the guy that's going to win in the end.
Mm-hmm.
More seriously, the show is about Katie choosing caught between like her love, her passion for her career. I guess those two things. And it feels like in the end, I think she is going to choose Guy. That's my predict.
Really?
No way.
I, I think we're going to have, like, not exactly a choose myself situation, but I think she's going to be put in a position, and we'll get to the what happens here at the end of the episode. But she is clearly moving up the ladder very quickly, and we get some information that might be a feint because they put it out there, but it certainly seems to imply stronger that there is a princess story. She is the heir to the Lacey's fortune. So I think we are going to end up with a situation where she is presented with a choice between these three guys, but ultimately chooses the job, which is going to be running Lacey's at the end of the season. Like, she's going to have the career, none of the guys. Maybe she's going to drive away her friends. I don't know if they're going to go for a cliffhanger, but I imagine they probably will to, like, try to tee up a second season. So I don't think Katie is going to end up in the ideal place, but I think she's going to end up in the career and powerful place.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do think it will end in a cliffhanger. What I'm saying is I feel like her and Guy have the most chemistry and most sort of in common or most going for them as a couple. Despite the fact the story would say that she might end up with KO.
Yeah, because you got to listen to your fucking heart at the end of the day. But I wanted to say that Gloria's kind of like last words, though, were like, hey, don't do it like me. I got caught up in some bullshit. You've got to keep work professional. And I think she's going to kind of stick to that.
No way. Katie blows it. Katie makes the mistake and then fixes it. That's like her whole thing.
Hopefully, because she can be a little bit smarter.
I guess we'll see. But back on the Gloria story, I mean, she comes.
You know, she lived her life.
Thanks, Dad. So Gloria steps out of the podium to talk about her book, coming strong with some bits about picturing the audience wearing Calvin Klein. Zing.
Oh, yeah. You got to open up with some, you know, icebreakers, some bits right off the bat.
Amanda already looking suspicious. In the middle of her speech, a lot of phone beeps, like news breaking. There's a big article in the Daily Hail.
I love scenes like this, by the way, where it's like these news items that get sent out in the middle of something are like an Amber Alert, where it just goes to every phone in New York City and everybody gets these things. And it's the Daily Hail revealing that she abused her power, sold people for sex. And it's an interesting, I liked how they played this plot line, because the story is clearly incorrect in some aspects. But as they point out, and as Amanda and Katie in particular discuss later on, it is correct in other aspects. And I thought, to be honest, I'm not usually a huge fan of Me Too type storylines, because I feel like they get it wrong, like in one direction or the other. Like, it's too much like, we gotta feel something for these people who got Me Too'd, which is stupid. Or it's just straight up like, this person is a scumbag, destroy them. This actually did a good job of threading the line and making us understand Gloria's perspective while not completely forgiving her.
Yeah, I agree. One other thing, what did you guys think of the fact that in the Katie Keene universe, the major newspaper... I'm talking right now, so I'll come in after.
So I just want to, something I'll point out. Normally we would pause for this sort of thing, but I will point out that somebody actually hit us up after listening to the podcast, and they're like, listen, I really enjoyed hearing the kids on the podcast.
Oh, man.
I found it very soothing. So there you go.
Well, I guess we can leave my daughter asking for a lollipop in. Great stuff. She interrupted an important topic I was bringing up.
It's an important question.
What do you think about, in this, the world of Katie Keene, that the major newspaper is the Daily Hail, obviously a spinoff of Hale and Hearty Soups, and that Big Soup has taken over the news?
That's a great, great question. I really wish it was News & Co. instead of Fresh & Co., so they led more to the salad side of thing.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of anything else quickly enough.
Stop,
that was a good...
Stop pushing your salad agenda. Yeah, stop pushing your salad agenda on us, all right? You know, soup is great, all right?
You really opened Panera's box there, Alex, by saying that.
Great point. Pete, I have a quick question for you. Just in terms of soup, would you prefer just like... soup in a bowl? Do you prefer in a bread bowl? How do you eat it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, with the technology being what it is, the bread bowl is the way to go. That's a new way to live. It's a great world out there.
Yeah.
You know, you can eat the bowl too, so there's no waste.
I mean, technically, you could eat any bowl.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
But would you want to?
No.
Bread bowl all
That was the whole
day.
Point of just solid Jurassic Park.
Oh,
they're, like, wow. Just because your scientists could, didn't mean they should.
Wow, you're frantically Googling other fast casual restaurants.
Is it working? Do you guys like me?
Yeah. I'm hoping that technology, as Pete's using the term technology, can finally move forward where we have soup served in a soup bowl. Mm. A bowl made of soup itself.
Apparently there's some place in San Francisco where they serve soup in a bread bowl, and they somehow serve two soups in the same bread bowl. But they stay separate the entire time? Sounds crazy to me.
What?
Truly, flying too close to the sun.
Yep.
To one soup at a time. We're a one soup at a time culture.
Similar to how Katie should choose one guy at a time, and now exactly. Back into the show.
Good. Wow. Perfect. Another perfect loop.
Now back into the show.
So
very
Gloria comes
to you.
Gloria is walked out of Lacey's. She is, it's sad. She shows up at Katie's house.
Super sad.
And there's a funny moment where she says, never thought I'd see all these colors in one place, referring to all the paint on the walls of Katie's house.
Yeah.
All the bad news, she still got the zingers.
Now, Pete, I thought of you during this moment when she was outside the door, because she stood out there and she said, well, are you going to invite me in? Do you think she's a vampire? She's a
vampire, yes.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
I agree. Vampire.
Yeah, because does that.
I love how on top of that you were, Pete. Your notes for this episode are just the word vampire written over and over again.
Yeah. And just little drawings of crosses to keep them away.
Smart. Let me ask you guys, when you were watching this, were there commercials for Katie Keene hair tips?
Yeah, right? That was crazy. They were like, hey, want to steal Katie Keene's style? I was like, what? What kind of commercial is this?
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I did watch it live, but I mostly tuned out during the commercials and was checking my phone. So I might have missed
missing out.
I'm just saying, look, next episode, look forward to me with a sweet little bob brushed out by Katie Keene.
The Sky Rizzy song commercial, which is one of my favorite songs on TV right now. Did you get that commercial, the Sky Rizzy commercial?
I don't think so.
Nothing is everything.
Oh, wow.
There's a whole catchy song and everything.
You must have some high-end television, Alex.
Mm-hmm. I also, while we're talking about commercials, last thing I'll mention is if you watch it in New York, at least, they show the New Jersey Lotto beforehand, the pick 7 and whatever else. Man, that's the saddest thing right now, because it's just an empty room where they're doing the little balls. And there's some old man who's like, oh, it's a New Jersey Lotto. Okay, here we go. Here's the numbers. Very sad. Used to be a whole to-do.
Yeah.
Is it okay if we keep you to that? You said that's the last thing you'll say. Is it all right if we hold you to that?
Wow.
Jesus.
Wow.
Saucy.
Zing. We jump back in. Guy and Katie. And he thinks it's time for Gloria to go. He is on the side. And this starts to shift Katie's thinking. Which I thought was an interesting plot point. Katie also uses the line that she's a little upset because she would never do sex to get ahead is a line she uses. Which I thought that was a fun way to refer to sex.
I think, is this the thing that like not exactly turns her against Guy, but makes her realize that sort of to your point, Justin, Guy is all about the business above almost anything else. And that's not what Katie does. Like, she does not lead with business sense first. She leads with her heart first more than anything else.
Yeah. And I think that's sort of her defining characteristic. But she confronts Gloria, says she's not going to write the letter, and sort of says, hey, you did, a lot of that stuff did happen. I think you need to rethink your whole thing. Katie seems to affect Gloria in this moment and make her sort of realize that maybe it is time for her to go. There's a lot of like real, everyone's sort of like pushing everyone else in a sort of a, I don't know if it's a positive direction, but in the direction mm-hmm. that they end up choosing in this episode, which I thought a much more equal playing field for all the characters here.
Yeah, it was also interesting that, like, Katie, kind of who's typically scared of confronting Gloria, kind of like was straight up like, hey, Gloria, I know I said I would write that letter, but I was thinking about it, and that letter is true. I mean, that is, that's a heck of a thing to stand up to someone who is a vampire and say, you know.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, I was Gloria, proud of
Gloria,
Katie for saying,
she got her number, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, my God.
Is that one of the lyrics?
I think the lyrics are, Gloria. Your name is Gloria, Gloria. It's spelled
G-L-O-R-I-A, Gloria.
That's, oh, there's some more child talking going on in the background. And like we said, we're gonna keep, oh, she wants me to wave to her. Have a good nap. Bye.
This is my favorite feature of this podcast.
Yep. Really, definitely saying this in in relationship to all of the sex truck talk earlier is totally cool.
Doesn't wear you out at all.
No, well, they're not sitting here watching me do this. That's just.
But they listen to the podcast later, right?
Of course, of course. It's the lullaby. I recount the entire podcast to them as they're going to sleep.
Yes.
So. Back into the story, something we say a lot in this episode specifically, this podcast. Katie, ping-ponging from side to side, goes to Mrs. Lacey, and she's straight up nasty. Then back to Gloria, gossiping about this, who told, how did this story come out? Gloria admits that she told Mrs. Lacey about Katie sleeping with the prince, which I thought was very fucked up. Katie seems fine with it.
Well, I mean, if we actually want to talk from an HR perspective, she had to tell everybody, and Gloria definitely needed to tell her direct boss. From a plot perspective, yes, weird, because we haven't seen a Lacey's HR department at any point, but certainly they would need to be upfront about that sort of thing.
We haven't seen the HR department, but I can guarantee that Katie will eventually be working in that department, because she works in every job in this entire store.
Yes.
Katie pitches the idea that they do a hit piece on Mrs. Lacey, which I was like, how many hit pieces are going to be in this episode of television?
Yeah, I know. A lot of
also
writing.
The Daily Hell being like, Jesus Christ, we need content. Just like feeding us stuff. We got no articles. Usually we publish 30 blank pages.
Yeah, so we're exactly. Just Daily Hell, 50 hit pieces each each newspaper. Gloria tells her not to sleep with the guy, like we talked about. Katie goes back, packs up Gloria's things, gives the dress back, and finds the letter from Lacey's son to Gloria, which matches the typewriter. LL. Now,
yes, Pete.
I mean, well, I just feel
you
that
said
like
now, and then you paused for a very long period of time.
Yeah.
Well, I
it's
think
like you're springing
I
a trap on us.
Yeah, like, I now, froze or somebody now. Froze. I apologize. I feel like. I want to talk about Amanda so much in this episode, and you talked about how she went back to the office and Amanda was sitting at her desk, and that was such an amazing moment. And what did she call it? I wrote this down. It was so funny. She had this sick burn on Katie. She called her. She was like, calm down, Angela Lamesbury. Oh,
yeah.
Sick burn. That was so good.
Amanda is great. Now, do you think Amanda was the one that leaked the article?
For a moment, when she was talking to her, I felt like she definitely could have been, because she got very, you know, she was like, oh, you know, what do you think about this thing with Gloria? And she was like, definitely like, nah, she is not nice to everybody.
I think by the end of the episode, to me, the implication was that Mrs. Lacey did it, specifically because Gloria publishing the book, talking about how she is the main driving force behind Lacey's, seems to have made Mrs. Lacey jealous and angry. So published, leaked this hit piece to essentially drive her out so that Mrs. Lacey could become once again the main face behind the brand. I don't think it was Amanda. Like you said, like there was a little blip of, ooh, maybe she did it. But I think ultimately it was Mrs. Lacey who did it.
Yeah, it's weird how they don't really give us that final answer. Because I was sure that it was Amanda for the first half of the episode. And maybe it still could be, I think.
I thought it was Xandra for a while. I was like, man, Xandra is fucking killing
She's all over it. It might be something they're holding on to, too, that eventually Gloria finds out that Mrs. Lacey has been leaking all these stories and embezzling money from the company and all of these other things, and they're able to force her out so Gloria does, in fact, become the head of Lacey's. I could see that happening an episode or two down the road.
I think that's a great call. We end the sort of Katie storyline with her dropping off her letter of resignation. She wants to stand with Gloria, leave Lacey's. While she's doing that, she happens to be suddenly in the middle of a meeting where Mrs. Lacey announced that Amanda's running the department with Katie.
Dun, dun, dun. Can they balance work and love? We'll find out.
Yeah, that's the real...
That's
Amanda
the
doesn't seem to have a lot of... love interest. Unless, of course, she's the same character as she is in that Comedy Central show that she stars
in. The other half?
The other half.
Yeah. Yeah, I love this move at the end. I thought this was so much fun. Also, Katie Keene's sweater was great. The little heart cutout sweater.
Well, Very cute. She goes, you guys are the heart and soul of this company. And she's literally wearing a heart shirt. So. Yeah.
Loved it. But I love this move. I love Amanda and Katie having to run it together and have to work together. We're going to get to see a lot more of Amanda, and that is always a good thing.
That's exciting.
Yes. I enjoyed the storyline a lot. I thought it was fun.
Super fun. Should we jump back and do Pepper?
Well, sure. Do you want to talk about the kind of like reveal with the initials on the sewing machine doll, or is that a different storyline?
That's a good call. The mom mystery is definitely deepening in this episode.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it has to be a feint at this point, right? Like the fact that they put it together and said, whoa, this guy probably romanced both my mother and Gloria. And that certainly seems to be the very strong implication. But it feels like there has to be a twist there, right? Like, because...
Is it Gloria? Is her mom? Is that the twist?
No. I don't think so. I thought that for a hot sec, but I was like, that's sort of... Katie's mom has been built up as, like, her, like, sort of lodestar, the thing that she really, like, worships. And, like, I think it'd be too weird to undercut that and make her some sort of liar. What I think it is mm-hmm. Katie's mom was the one who had the relationship with... was it Leroy Lacey or
Louis Lacey?
Yeah, Louis Lacey. That's Louis Lacey.
Leo?
Katie's mom has the relationship with the Lacey's son, and Gloria was jealous and somehow forced Katie's mom out. So I think Gloria is going to end up being sort of the villain.
Or Gloria covered up for her for that relationship and said it was her or something like that.
Yeah, well, she talked about having a romance with a guy that didn't work out because I think his heart was elsewhere, if I remember correctly, from the beginning of the episode. Ooh, so that seems pretty clear in terms of what you're talking about, Justin. Yeah. Again, I wonder if there is going to be some sort of twist or if it's just we know what's going on and eventually they'll get around to it as characters. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. But I like that mystery. I think they've handled that well. They sort of are very subtle about it, and they're not really putting it in our faces. So I'm glad they're doing it that way.
Let's move on to Pepper. Talk about the old Peps.
So Pepper, she's at the Pepper plant prepping for Kevin's big reading. Dee Dee shows up, and then Pepper's wife got in, brings a Pepper plant and a real zinger. Say it with flowers.
Yep. That was a big Pepper plant, I gotta say.
Yeah,
like,
and
to
really
carry that through New York?
Yeah, and that's full. It was full of produce.
Mm-hmm. It was. Little hot chili peppers going on there. Very cute.
Red hot chili peppers.
Yeah. Ooh, like the band.
Yes. They were under the bridge.
Fun dad joke.
There's a flea there. Mm-hmm. Well, as I've proven on this episode, I am a dad.
Yeah. So thanks for finally proving that.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. The case is closed. moving through, we're setting up this. We had the revelation that Pepper has a wife that she left in a Marrakesh prison at one point, which feels very aggressive.
I mean, honestly, who hasn't?
Yeah.
You know?
And Pepper is more and more becoming like an international, like pretty high stakes criminal.
Yes, she is. Which, you know, is fun. That's good. I love filling in those details. I love Pepper in this episode. Like, I think they were cut. Well, I think they were kind of slow going with her character. But Julia Chan was having so much fun playing Pepper this episode. Her looks were so good. It was great. I enjoyed this storyline was a minor one in terms of the span of the show, but I enjoyed this quite a bit. And I liked the back and forth that I don't remember the exact amounts, but that basically her wife blackmails her and says, get me, what is it, $50,000?
30.
And she needs $40,000 for the pepper plant in order to finish everything up. And eventually that she is able to pull a scab and turn everything around, pay off her wife, get the money for the pepper plant, figure that whole thing out. I thought that was good.
Yeah, and I guess, should we talk about that? Kevin's storyline sort of dovetails with Pepper.
Yeah.
We find out that he's teaching drama at Riverdale, which I thought was a fun detail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Although he's kind of disappointed himself for still being there.
Yeah, yes. So, I mean, just to establish this takes place five-ish years in the future past Riverdale. Right. And I did think, again, they played this very nicely. The fact that, like, he's the drama teacher at Riverdale High. As we find out later, he tried to make it in New York, but was preyed on sexually by a Tony-winning director who scared him off. He went back to Riverdale, hid out there, couldn't watch the Tonys anymore. And he's sad about his life. Like, he's written a play called La Bonne Nuit, which that is set in a place called Creekdale. So clearly he learned at Jughead Jones's feet how to barely hide what's going on in your stories. So that was fun.
Hiding it is not what he's doing. All the characters are named for themselves.
The casting was fantastic, though.
Perfect
casting for that.
So to get there, we have Pepper's going to do a big show. She's going to invite all the big critics, including Adele Dazeem. Did you guys catch that? That was a fun
one. I did catch that.
Shout out to Travolta. Do you think in the world of Katie Keene that's a real person, or is it Pepper just absolutely lying?
No. I think that's a real person, that like Idina Menzel is Adele Dazeem in the world of Katie Keene, like, which is a classic Riverdale Katie Keene type thing to do.
Yes, I thought it was fun.
Classic.
But I also think I think we're going to find out that Pepper is lying like 80% of the time. So I wouldn't put it past her to just be like, oh, who am I inviting? And then just make up 9 names.
Yes. Yeah, that's fair. Though she does pack the reading. Like both times with The Kiss of the Spider-Woman and with this, she has delivered on that stuff. So even if she is a shit talker most of the time, she is also... seems to actually be connected and actually have a column in the Daily Hail and all of these other things.
That's one of the big mysteries of the show, is what is real with Pepper. And they have not given us a lot of clues so far. The only stuff that's been exposed about her is stuff we already knew she was lying about.
Yeah.
Yeah, that and the wife, though.
So let's talk about Kevin's play, which we get. Pepper is reading the part of Cheryl Blossom. Katie Keene is Betty Cooper, complete with ponytail. Also, Pepper, I should mention, has the spider brooch on her, which I thought was a cute little detail. Jorge, as Ginger, of course, is like full-on comic book Veronica Lodge straight out of the gate. Yeah. So really fun.
Ginger Lopez as Veronica Lodge is just magical. Absolutely magical.
Not now, over the top at all.
I got to ask you guys, I loved... that it just felt like they were not even making fun in a bad way, but just lovingly poking fun at Riverdale. Kevin earlier on is like, oh, the play's about making out and murder, which is Riverdale. That's how he describes it. But the stuff throughout, they have somebody tied up in pops. Cheryl at one point is like, don't do anything to my TT, which is just
her accent is hilarious throughout this.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And Veronica is like, nobody messes with Choni, which drove fans. Like, I was watching this on Twitter. They were like, they said the hard C. I'm going crazy here. How dare they? Yeah. But I felt like all of this stuff is so purposeful and so like clearly just poking fun at the fan base in exactly the right way. But the thing that I wanted to ask you guys was, people also were like ripping it apart for clues because of all the stuff going on at Riverdale right now with Barchi and Bughead and everything else, where they were like, Betty's character in the play was like, I've made some mistakes, but we all got past that. And they were like, oh, are they talking about Barchi? Is that kissing Archie? Ooh. Is that what they're talking about?
No way is the clue to Riverdale in this middle of this episode.
Now,
Well, I just wait, wanted to say, what other clue? Hold on, and then Pete, I'll let you talk. The other clue that people are like, Ginger as Veronica was wearing a gigantic diamond ring on her ring finger, and they were like, oh my god, is Veronica married at this point in the future? And again, I feel the same way with that, where it was just like, there aren't any clues. It's just a silly detail.
Well, let me take that though as a clue.
Wait. The look on Josie's face when she had to sit there for the reading and she's just shaking her head like, I can't believe, like, I'm in this kind of nightmare. I'm playing me and everybody else is like a fake. It was hysterical and I loved every second of it. Okay, sorry.
Yes. Yeah. Go ahead. Josie does seem like, in general, Josie is over everything, it feels like, especially in this episode. So it was funny to have her be like, oh, not this shit again. To take that, if Veronica had a big diamond ring on her finger, she's not marrying Archie. Archie's not. Yeah. Archie's going to stay in Riverdale. Ooh. And do it. So that's a what? That's a Reggie ring?
I mean, this is a whole other podcast, but just to like delve into it really quickly, apparently there's probably going to be some sort of time jump when eventually we get into season 5 or whatever counts as season 5 episodes of Riverdale. And my biggest theory is that I think we're going to see like all of the couples shaken up on Riverdale. So we're going to see, we could see Veronica married to somebody, but like, she moved to New York and married somebody who wasn't Archie, wasn't Reggie, is some rich, smug asshole. She's running whatever sort of businesses down there, and then comes back to Riverdale and those old feelings spark or something like that.
Or just engaged.
Yeah, even. But
yeah, or also, engaged, yes.
It also looked like a little bit of Ginger Lopez just throwing some flair on her character. Yes. You know what I mean?
I think it's more likely that's exactly what it was.
Either way, it's fun. So Pepper is working with Kevin to entrap this man that took advantage of Kevin back when he was auditioning in New York. This dude is an absolute creep, and he absolutely is again. So he and Kevin's playing along.
So gross,
Kevin,
man.
Goes to get
so
a drink
gross.
With him. Guy doesn't think Gargoyle King is real, which is a big sign of a real jerk. Mm-hmm. We know that. Yeah. Wild scumbaggery. Then there's some whispering, and they had been record. Kevin's wearing a wire. They record it. Pepper blackmails him for not just $30,000, but the full seventy grand that she needs
to cover both.
Which I thought was ballsy.
Is upsetting to me because Kevin doesn't get a cut of shit, and like he put himself on the line, and that's people are making money, and Kevin doesn't get a slice.
He doesn't care about the money. What he ultimately
justice
gets is
for
the
Kev.
Hold on. He gets justice because what happens is Pepper gets the $70,000 in blackmail and then publishes the story anyway, which exposes this guy. And then at the end of the episode, Kevin says, well, I can finally watch the Tony Awards again, which is what I wanted to do. And he knows that this guy has been ruined in the industry, is never going to be around anymore. And that's what he wanted. He didn't need the money. What was he going to do with that? You know, they already have they have an out-of-control budget at the Riverdale High Drama Department. They can put on full-fledged productions of absolutely anything. He doesn't need anybody.
Base is crazy in Riverdale. The insurance payouts are strong.
I can't believe you're insinuating that a teacher at a public school has money. Come on, man. This is awful.
Have you seen the hangout room in the Riverdale High? It's like a Explorers Club drawing room.
And what is Kevin going to do? Buy another flannel shirt? He's already got one.
Oh, yeah. Man. He's lousy with flannel.
Kevin had to relive a fucking nightmare so everybody else could make money. And Kevin's like, well, I get to watch the Tonys again. I mean, sure, that's got to be killing him with his love of theater. But, you know, it'd be nice if he got a little slice is all I'm saying.
But also, not to keep putting Pepper in the villain spot, but we don't know how much she told Kevin she made off of it or even if she blackmailed him at all. She just published the article, and Kevin may know nothing of the money. So it's not like he's feeling ripped off. He just may have been ripped off.
While we're talking about Kevin, why don't we move over to Josie's storyline? Because that's the other big one that he ties into.
Yeah.
Well, one real quick thing just to finish up with Pepper. Her ex shows back up, gets the money, steals Dee Dee, and plans to ruin Pepper, which I thought was Dee Dee is such a power chip in this game all of a sudden.
But it was also very interesting the way that was set up because Pepper basically double-crossed the creepy teacher. Yes, he deserved it. And then she got double-crossed and was very upset by it. And it was kind of, you know, I thought it was, you know, a little bit of a karma kind of biting her in the ass a little bit there.
It was a quadruple cross. Two times yes. two.
Yeah.
Nice. Way to check the math there, Alex. Cross.
No problem. I Googled that.
Okay, Google, what is two times two? You idiot. You Googled. Idiot. It's four.
Oh, my God.
Yes, let's jump over to Josie. So she's got the Pussycats together, the brand new Pussycats. They want to sing, and she's like, no, it's Josie and the Pussycats, not Ooh. The Pussycats and also Josie.
Right. So. Exactly. And we did forget to mention that she did get two new Pussycats. These are Archie Comics characters, though very much the show's own version of them. One is Cricket, and the other one is Trula Twist, I think is her name. Mm-hmm. And they want in on the music, which I think is fair. It was interesting, given the progress that Josie has made as a character on the show, to have her instantly fall back into the way she was in high school in this episode. But I think part of that is, well, she's on her own again. She has the Pussycats again. So of course you fall back into old habits. And I liked that the storyline had Kevin in particular present that to her and throw that in her face and help her move forward as a person.
I yes, agree. Please. Yeah. Oh, good.
Kevin really showed what an amazing friend he is in this episode because
Stepbrother. She
chewed Kevin the fuck out. And then he could have walked out and been like, fuck you, you know, you don't talk to me like that. But instead, he stayed and gave Josie amazing advice about how now she needs to grow. And if she says she's past Riverdale, she needs to show that she is past that. And it really helped Josie be a better person, a better band member. And like, that was all Kevin there. And he had every right to be like, fuck you for yelling at me, coming at me. You know, you don't know the shit that I've dealt with this episode in particular.
True. But I also think he felt bad because him, after he made his Target run for some snacks, very subtly mentioned.
Target.
Indeed. Different.
Target.
He was the one that caused the new Pussycats to quit. He gave them the information.
Yeah, but he gave them information. It's not like scandalous. Yeah,
I'm not saying it's scandalous. I'm saying he felt bad for his stepsister that he threw her a wrench. Threw a wrench in the works.
Yeah, that was an honest accident, though. Like, I think that was more on the line of Josie not giving them the information that Trula and Cricket needed to be fully informed. And regardless, they got through it and ultimately came together as a band in classic Josie and the Pussycats fashion.
Why won't you guys...
Oh, go ahead.
Why won't you guys acknowledge that Kevin did a really great thing and he's a great friend? Why won't you say that?
Okay, really holding our feet to the fire here. Yes, Kevin's a good friend.
Thank you. Kevin is not a good friend. He's a good stepbrother for the last time, Pete.
He's a step friend.
Yes.
Which exactly. is a friend you get in a marriage.
Which is a real thing that happens. So there you go.
Exactly. Yeah. I did think it was funny the two excuses why the new Pussycats couldn't be there were they were at a climate change protest and in bed watching the morning show. really aggressively on character.
The writer of the episode actually said on Twitter that his favorite detail that he put in the script was the morning show thing because it takes place 5 years in the future, implying that Apple TV Plus is still around in 5 years.
And that they're still paying for the morning show, one of the most expensive shows on television. Going on aside all of this Kevin stuff with Josie is Xandra had popped in earlier in the episode and says, I want to be a Pussycat. I'm a good singer. You said so yourself. And I love cats. Josie not having it, which really bites her in the ass after she's gotten the new Pussycats together. They're all on the same page when it comes to music. They've rehearsed the jam. They're ready to go out. And as they're walking out.
Wait, and the most important detail before you get to it, though, they're wearing the costumes. They're wearing the Josie and the Pussycat costumes, long tails and ears for hats. Yes. This is a weird lyric, but that actually is accurate.
Yeah, ears for hats. They have a night. There's a little ritualistic moment with them donning the ears for hats.
Well, because we never really got that on Riverdale. Like, they wore the cat ears occasionally, but as much as I missed Melody and Valerie. Melody and Valerie. I was like, Melody and Valentine. That's not right. Melody and Valerie. As much as I missed whoever those people are, it was nice seeing the classic costumes, as ridiculous as they are, in this updated version. I like Cricket and Trula. I think they're interesting characters that I want to find out more about, and I'm excited to see a true to the comics version of the Pussycats, complete with the thing that you were about to get into, which is a evil band trying to take them down.
Yes, the misfits to their gem and the holograms. Xandra has formed another band with, I guess, the models that her dad had maybe put out earlier.
I think they're different people. Yeah, it would make sense if it was those models, but I think it's two different Pussycats.
I couldn't tell because Xandra is performing Josie's song, lip syncing to it, and she's dancing in front of in the middle of the crowd, and the light was all on Xandra. You couldn't even see the other Pussycat girls.
Yeah, which I loved. I loved how that was shot, and I think that really emphasized the opposite of what Josie was going through, which is, we're going to be a band. It's going to be all three of us together, one all for one and one for all. And Xandra is like, nope, this is about me. I'm going to be a star. I'm going to be on billboards. I'm going to take everything from you. And that's how they shot it. And I thought that was great.
And I love the moment go ahead, Pete.
I was just going to say, that's a really sick burn to say to her face, like, you're going to have to watch me live your dream. And I was like, damn.
That's what I was going to say. I love this moment afterwards where Josie confronts her and is like, hey, you took my songs. And she's like, yeah, I own those songs. And I'm going to do everything you want to do with my band, Xandra and the Kitty Cats, and leaving Josie in a real tough spot. What do you think she's going to do to fix this?
I mean, Josie can write songs. Like, that's the difference between her and Xandra. Like, Xandra, great pop star sensibilities. The dancing was great. The singing was great. Loved
cool
all
hair.
Of that. Yeah, cool hair. Everything, she's got it down. But Josie actually has the talent and the songwriting ability. I don't know, if this show ultimately is about heart and being an artist and persevering no matter what, then Josie is going to win out because of that, because of her true talent.
She's about her Xandra. Band.
Yeah, who needs other people to write the stuff for her. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see whether they go in a fairy tale direction or a more realistic direction.
Yeah, I think she's going to reinvent herself. And I actually feel like this is probably the last time we've seen the Pussycat costumes.
They are in the next episode, but I could see it going away after
My guess is she's going to leave behind the pussy. If Xander's taking the kitty cats, she's going to let her have that. She's going to reinvent herself with a more realistic, musical persona.
But I'm too attached to the band. They can't do that.
I think the band is going to be with her. It's just they're going to be more edgier and less spandex pussycat costumes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But all of my favorite bands wear cat based spandex.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Like Kiss?
Yeah, exactly.
Right, like Kiss and other bands.
Last thing to talk about, truly the most heartbreaking storyline of the episode. It goes from ridiculous to sad very quickly. Jorge's story. In the opening scenes, Jorge can't stop mentioning how he had a three-way, which I thought was very funny.
Yeah, that was hysterical.
Yes. Just literally apropos of nothing. People are like, there was some conversation. I'm forgetting the first couple of things, but somebody's like, I designed a dress and I wrote a song and I had a three-way.
Yeah.
Popping in with that no matter what. Very, very funny. Also, like I said towards the beginning of the podcast, not what I expected from Jorge based on the look the last episode. And in fact, his behavior in this whole storyline was very surprising to me. The implication at the end of the last episode was that he felt like he would need to make some sort of choice, that this wasn't exactly what he expected. But instead, he's the one that is all in on everything right at the top of this episode and right all the way through the episode until it gets thrown back right in his face.
Yeah, I think we didn't get a lot of time with him in this episode because there's so much else going on, so we weren't in his head a lot. But if I had to speculate, I think he's very stressed about what happened, but also excited. So when he's with his friends, he's excited about it. But more in one-on-one situations, he's stressed because he doesn't know how to handle this. And then he proceeds to not handle it very well, despite the fact that it feels like, based on what happened last episode and this episode, right from the jump, Bernardo is more into Buzz than he thought he would be, and to Jorge's detriment, maybe more than he is into Jorge. And the way it plays out here is Jorge and Bernardo decide to talk to Buzz. Jorge's wearing a crazy neon turtleneck that is very difficult to make sort of to look at. But he offers, they offer to be in a throuple with Buzz. Buzz is like, whoa, I am not ready for this. Bernardo's like, okay, cool. Then later, Jorge and Bernardo have a big fight where Bernardo is really overreacting to Jorge, I felt like.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Interesting. Go ahead, Pete.
Yeah. Yeah, because he was like, Jorge is all like, oh, so broken up. And I thought that the firefighter definitely had a lot of ground to stand on to be like, hey, why are you hurt over this? You know, this is supposed to be you and me, and then we're inviting him in type of thing, and you're treating this like a breakup, and I'm supposed to be your boyfriend.
Well,
yeah, lines got just blurry, and I think he had the right to be like, why do you care so much about this type of thing?
Well, there's two things that happen here, just to clarify in terms of events. First, Jorge finds out that Bernardo and Buzz have been texting off the throuple group chain, which is Bernardo doesn't see as a big deal. They were just kind of chatting about jogging and other things, and things that Jorge is not interested in, but Jorge does feel like it's a big deal. And then when Buzz says no to the throuple, as you were mentioning, Pete, they go to a bar and Jorge keeps ordering drinks and says, oh, this is what I always do when I go through a breakup. And Bernardo is pissed because he says, I don't want to console you while you're pretending you're having a breakup with somebody else when I'm your boyfriend. So I think there's mistakes made on both sides. And I was glad to see the thing that happens towards the end of the episode, which is Jorge puts on his ridiculous jogging wear, which
very
was
funny.
A delightful costume, goes and wants to jog with Bernardo to make amends, but sees Bernardo and Buzz are already jogging together.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Oh, look, you're broken up.
I'm crying.
We should say, Alex, the reason Alex is so upset is because he was once broken up with when a clown he was dating went jogging with another clown.
Yes, it was very funny, but also very sad.
Yeah, what was sad was they all took the same clown car to get there, you know, and then they went running separately. So,
yeah. And you should go jogging with Pagliacci, said the doctor. And I said, but doctor, I am Pagliacci jogging.
And Alex, you had a relationship with an entire clown car of clowns, right? It was like, it was like a throuple.
How can you not?
Like,
once you get in there, you know, just everybody's parts are everywhere and it becomes a thing. It's a whole
clergy.
Thing.
A clergy.
Yes. Yes. A clergy.
I was hurt because I was hoping it almost retroactively made me wonder if, you know, Bernardo was kind of pushing for this agenda all along. Because, like,
see,
Jorge was
thought.
Saying things and he was kind of like, okay, sure. Yeah, wow, this is working out great for me. And then kind of like took a moment to get to blow up to kind of like break it off. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that was kind of like happened in his favor or what. But I was excited when Jorge was going to fight for him, and the way they kind of set up in the episode, they were like, oh, you can still get him back. There's still time. So that was also very heartbreaking.
Yeah, I think we'll see more of this going forward, certainly.
Yes.
Like, this plot line is not done. I also feel like there is going to be a thing where Bernardo and Buzz are not in a relationship so much as just talking about everything that went down and became friends, because their connection still is Jorge. So, I don't know. I think they just they need to have a conversation, right? Like, they need to sit down and actually talk about it. Jorge was manic in a way, so I wonder, to your point, Justin, about not getting in his head, if part of it was overcompensating for everything that went on and just trying to be happy and joyful and really pushing it because he doesn't feel totally comfortable. Yes, Pete.
Also, Jorge was kind of like hurt initially, and when they kind of started talking, that the lawyer guy or the stockbroker guy was like, didn't count his relationship as a relationship, and Jorge was like, we dated for a year, and he was saying, yeah, my first like out of the closet kind of relationship, and that was also, which is understandable a little bit, to be hurt if someone doesn't count your relationship, you know what I mean? So, I mean, in that point, like, I could understand Jorge being upset. But yeah, I'm interested to see how this moves forward. It's really been twisting and turning and a kind of a relationship thing that I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. And that's why I felt bad for Jorge. Sort of Buzz isn't taking care of Jorge in this episode. Bernardo, no matter what is happening, I do think Bernardo overreacts to Jorge. Jorge, despite the fact that he's drinking and all that and said, like, oh, this is how I always drink after a breakup, he was sort of like having a fun night out, it felt like, at the same time. So I think Bernardo takes that very intensely, and there are a couple ways to go. It could have been an innocent jogging sesh with Buzz, or it could be that Bernardo has moved to be dating Buzz, and that's what it felt like to me. I thought it was a bad look.
We will have to see what happens going forward. Now, before we wrap up, any final thoughts, any other things you want to talk about with the episode?
Well, I did think it was interesting that Katie Keene at one point was like, hey, do you want me to go ask KO, or I could talk to KO, because they were talking about Xandra, and KO and Xandra are dating. So, like, I did like the fact that KO is still on Katie Keene's radar, even though we don't see him in this episode. So I appreciated that little shout out, and it's nice to know that, you know, even if she's having sex dreams about the devil, KO is still in there. You know what I mean?
That's right. She was going to very romantically go to him to try to get information out of him for Josie. One of the most romantic things you can do is ask an ex to help you out with a friend.
Yep. Good times. All right. If you want to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live to the internet show every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out and we'll chat about Katie Keene, comic books, and plenty of other things. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Socially, you can check us out at Riverdale After on Twitter, at Riverdale Dark on Instagram, Riverdale After Dark on Facebook. And remember,
Katie Keene. That's a show.
Katie Keene.
It's a podcast. Katie Keene.
Keep going.
I think that's the only lyrics.